Elin, why don't you introduce the members of your band? That would...
All right. Well, on electric guitar here, we've got Jerry Miller. On drums and harmony vocals, we've got Jason Beek. And on upright bass, Matt Murphy, everybody.
All right. Well, we're going to have some conversation, but why don't we get started off with some music? Why don't you do a song for us?
Okay. One from our new album, I suppose. Our new album is called Gypsy. It hasn't been released yet. It's coming out August 16th.
Sure.
This is a song of mine. It's called Crawl.
Well, that was great. Thank you very much. So tell us about the new album. It's coming out, you said, in August 16th. Is that right?
That's right.
And I saw on your website that you said this is your favorite album. Why is that? Why is it your favorite album?
I really enjoyed putting this album together. It came together very just gracefully, and it was fun to record. It's not always fun in the studio. Sometimes it feels like pulling hair out, you know, or pulling teeth, and... It's sometimes kind of an ugly picture, but this time in the studio, it just, for whatever reason, it just came together really nicely, and I enjoyed writing all the songs. I was writing even in the studio sometimes, like seconds before we're about to start recording, and I'm still like scribbling and furiously writing, but that didn't bother me. Like, it wasn't stressful. It was just really fun and exciting.
It's a little more relaxed maybe than some of the other sessions you've been through?
Yeah, I'd like to think that after, 14 years of recording, that it's finally starting to feel comfy for me. But I don't know. I don't want to jinx it. Maybe the next album we do is going to be just a horrific experience. But we'll find out.
So I'm always curious, it's probably going to sound like a weird thing to ask, but I'm always curious about how artists decide on the title for the album and then the order of the tracks on the album. Was that something that you gave a lot of thought to, or just, no, we'll just put them together this way, or how did that come about for this album?
Well, it came about in a really similar way to the way the rest of the album came about. It was just seemed really obvious to me. It's like, oh, well, we have a song called Gypsy. I really like that song, so let's call the album Gypsy. And I didn't lose sleep over it.
Yeah.
And same thing with the title, I mean the order of the songs. I just said, yeah, this seems like a really good order.
Yeah, the reason I ask, I feel a little bit like the college student who reads something in a literature or a book and says, oh, I think the author meant that. And they're like, well, no, they weren't thinking about that. But when I listened to the album, it seemed like a collection of like almost mini sets to me. Hmm. Like the first three songs were sort of the heartbreak kind of genre. And then you had a couple of, you probably wouldn't use this phrase, but I would, social commentary pieces like 79 Cents. Mm-hmm. And then a few more love, heartbreak. And then you wrapped up with a couple of social commentary kinds of pieces. So it was interesting. It was an interesting sort of interplay between those as I listened to that. The pieces like 79 Cents, is that, I've listened to some of your other stuff, and like Green Hills has a little bit of that kind of commentary piece, but is this a new thing or a different direction for you, or is it just, no, this is pretty much what we've been doing?
Well, we put an angry, protesty type song on our first album.
Mm-hmm.
The first album's called Boundary County. And there's a song on there called The Flood. Well, thank you.
Yeah, a couple of fans, yeah.
And The Flood is about what I perceived to be a systemic failure in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. And it seemed to me like, well, anyway, I won't go too far into that song, but it was a little bit of a scary experience because after that album was released, supposedly a fan sent back the CD to our label and scratched a message with some kind of sharp implement on the back of the CD.
Oh, wow.
That said, politics has no place in folk music. And
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Wow, good to know.
I guess someone should tell Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger. They obviously did not get the memo.
Wow.
But yeah, so I was kind of intimidated by that, and for a while that quieted me a little bit. There is a somewhat political song on the second album, but it's more disguised.
Sure.
It's called How Long, and it's a Martin Luther King Jr. speech set to music. But then just in recent years, I've just really felt like I, as a person, just need to say what I feel. Mm-hmm. And I think that's partly my job as an artist too, and to let go of the rest. Like I do my thing, I let go of how it's perceived. You know, I try to come across as well as I can, but you know, in the long run, if I offend or lose fans or get a threat of some kind, life goes on.
Well, I would imagine that would be unsettling to get something like have something like that happen, where you get a message from somebody, you know.
It seemed sinister, especially with the message scratched in the,
yeah.
You know, it was a scratching that I think really threw me off for a little bit. But I'm back in the saddle now. It's all good. It was ages ago.
Yeah. Oh. Well, another song on the album. I mean, I thought it was a great. I think it's a great album. I really love all the tracks.
Thanks.
On it. One of the ones I loved was you have the line, you cared enough to lie.
Oh, yeah, it's a Pinto Bennett song. Yeah.
So why did you pick that song there? Because I know you don't do as many covers as like some other artists might do. You do a lot of, except for like the Loretta Lynn album, but I mean, mm-hmm. You do a lot of your own stuff. So why did you pick that song?
Well, it's the only cover song on the album. I did that because I really wanted it to stand out as a kind of a special, it has a special place in the album for me because the man who wrote that song is named Pinto Bennett, and I really love his music, and I feel like more people need to know about him. He's an Idahoan like myself, and his star was rising, but then I don't know what happened. He just never really got the credit that I think he deserves. And he's getting up there in age, and his health is not that great. And Jason here produced what Pinto is calling his last album ever. So I want, if that is the case, and if it really is his last album, I want to do my part to make sure as many people know about him as possible. He's a really great songwriter, especially in that classic country kind of way. He can make you laugh and break your heart in just at the turn of a dime.
Well, if you had to pick a cover, you picked a good one, because as soon as I heard that, I'm like, wow, that's a sweet song.
Thanks. Would you like us to play that song?
Sure. What's it now?
Might as well, right?
That was great. So Pinto's from Idaho. You're from Idaho.
Yes.
And I know you moved away. Are you back in Idaho? Or are you?
I'm back. Yeah.
All right. So how is being from Idaho, do you think, affecting you as a musician? I mean, what do you take from being? Because I heard, read, heard in an interview somewhere where you put a lot of value on being from Idaho. That was a special place for you, not just some place you lived when you were young. So what about that speaks to you?
I identify with Idaho for a lot of different reasons. I really find a lot of inspiration in the wide open spaces of that state, and it's where I, even when I wasn't living there, I was flying across the country from Boston, where the band formed, just to do all my writing, because it's just it's the place that speaks to me the most. There's just tons of mountains and lakes and rivers and woods and just so many different ways to go and get lost and get your mind off of the normal things. And I feel like that's really conducive to creativity.
Yeah. So what is your process for writing? How do you go about
it? I keep a notebook all the time, and if I think of a little idea or maybe a few lines of a song, I'll write it down. And I keep it kind of constant, you know, try to add to it. And sometimes it'll just be a bunch of little scraps of paper and I'll tuck them in the notebook. And eventually, when I have a free moment, I'll sit down and somewhere in Idaho and we'll try to see if I can bring more of it to light. Like sometimes a couple of lines that I wrote down a long time ago will kind of jolt something in my creative brain, and then that'll be a whole basis for a song. You know, sometimes it's just a couple lines I wrote years ago, and sometimes though a whole song will just come to me completely intact, and I just have to keep up with, like, write it down fast enough before it disappears. So every song's a little bit different. But.
Now the songs in this latest album, are they ones that you wrote between albums, or some of those ones you hung onto the scraps of paper for some time and you kind of slowly work them into something?
Yeah, they all have a different genesis. I mean, each one has its own story. Some of them, like I said, I was writing in the studio still and was like, I have no idea what I'm about to do when the record light lights up. And others I had been working on for, you know, 10 years maybe, just off and on.
So now I'm curious, which of the songs on the album was the one you were, or ones you were writing in the studio as you were, or the...
I was still figuring 79 Cents out in the studio. I scrapped like whole verses in the studio, and just before we were about to record, I thought of the line that I like the most about the meow. For those of you who haven't heard the song, you'll hear it later. Eventually you'll... We could play it?
I think so.
I don't have my guitar, but maybe that's okay.
If you want to play, that'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great.
You don't feel like
no,
that would
be fine.
Okay.
That'd be fine.
All right. All right. Let's do. This is called 79 Cents, the Meow Song. She's rich or toiling in a ditch, no matter the color of her collar, the heart of your home works her fingers to the bone for 79 cents to your dollar. 79 cents, 79 cents, oh, oh. Hey, hey, it's all right, it's okay, 79 cents to your dollar. But if her skin is brown, her pay goes down, it's a nickel to the white man's dime. Fevered regret.
Thanks. So the album, like your band, is a great mix of styles. And I don't know how you think of your music. This is really funny. I read one description of your music that used the terms country, blues, folk, rockabilly, and surf all in the same sentence. So how would you describe your music? If someone asked you, what kind of music do you play? How would you?
I tend to say that it's a mix of almost every type of music with early in front of it. Like, I'm influenced by early blues, early country, early jazz, early rock and roll. That's the zone that I grew up listening to. Like, that's my musical zone, and that still influences me today, and I feel like that's what we're playing. And a lot of people call it just Americana, because that's such a miscellaneous term, and I'm pretty sure we fall under that category too, so. But yeah, I kind of struggle to describe it as well.
So what's the attraction to the early part of that?
I feel like early examples of genres, they still know who they are, you know? Like, country knew what it was originally, and now I feel like country, once the 60s came around, or, you know, mid-60s, late-60s country, for the most part, I feel like a lot of country artists and country music executives were trying to sound middle of the road, trying to sound mainstream, trying to sound like rock and roll. And I feel like they ended up doing themselves a disservice. And now I can't tell the difference between a country song and a rock and roll, or I guess rock song. To save my life. Maybe sometimes I can, if I strain, I can hear a fiddle, but so I'm just sort of a purist that way. Like, if I'm going to listen to a type of music, I want to hear the pure form of that.
So who are, from those early genres, who are some of your musician heroes?
So Hank Williams, you know, the first one, and Loretta Lynn, of course. And then for the blues artists, it's Willie Dixon, and Robert Johnson, of course. So I tend to like the people in the genre who influenced later musicians in that genre. We're all influenced by someone, but I tend to kind of steer clear of the people who were influenced by Robert Johnson. I'd rather just listen to Robert Johnson, you know, which is, I think, a little bit silly of me, because here I am doing blues songs and expecting people to listen. I'm not Robert Johnson, but that's just how it goes.
Yeah, well, going to the source, so to speak.
Yeah, I like the source.
Yeah, yeah. So given that you play from so many styles of music, that takes a band that is pretty flexible and talented mm-hmm. to do that. How did you all come together?
Well, I have Boston to thank for that. Because I moved to Boston when I was like 24, I want to say. So, you know, just like a year ago. And and I met Jason here first, and he introduced me to, when I met him, we had a friend in common. And when I met Jason, I said, I'm looking to start a band. And he said, great, because I want to be in a band with you. And I know all the great musicians in town. And he introduced me to Jerry. Jason was a fan of some other projects that Jerry was in. And then through our connections in Boston, people we know in Boston, we got to meet Matt on okay. upright bass. So yeah, Boston's such a great music town, and was really a big part of my musical genesis, I guess you'd say.
And how long have you all been together?
We came together for the recording of our first album, which was 2005.
Okay, so 14 years.
14 years.
And how has your playing together changed over those 14 years, do you think?
Gosh. I think that...
Because that's a long time for a band to be together.
Yeah.
In the same lineup.
It is, yeah. How has it changed? I'm not sure.
Bassists.
Well, yeah, we have a new bassist. I think I'm more confident as a performer. When we just recorded our first album, I had not even done very many live shows before. So a lot of our sound we've just developed on the road, mm-hmm. just from gigging night after night for 14 years.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
I think when we started recording, we didn't have much money, so we rehearsed as much as possible before we went into the studio. So there wasn't a whole lot of creating in the studio. Whereas these more recent albums, it's a product of having a 5-year-old and limited time to sleep or do anything. So we're now doing more creating in the studio. I guess that's different.
Yeah, it's maybe a little more loose. The sound is a little looser in the studio than it used to be. I don't know. Maybe that doesn't even come across, though. It's hard to tell when you're in it so closely.
And given that you have, 11 albums, do I have that right?
Yeah, it depends on how you count.
If you count Shaker.
I have no easy answer for anything.
Yeah, it's all right. It preserves the mystery, so that's good. but let over 10, you're in double digits by some counting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty good sized catalog with a wide variety of music styles. How do you put a set list together for a show? Does that vary from audience to audience or from venue?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky. We like to keep kind of a core set list the same from night to night, but vary it a little bit depending on what people request.
Mm.
But it is really tricky. It's getting harder and harder to come up with a set list because we do have so many albums and there's so many songs to choose from, and I don't know how really to go about it. So I just choose some songs and hope for the best. And usually people are all right with my song selections, but every now and then I get someone kind of angry at me saying, "Why didn't you play blah blah blah?" Mm. I'm sorry. I haven't played that song in 13 years, but yeah.
Okay.
We just try our best.
Sure, sure. So you mentioned, it depends on how you count them. So you have a few side projects that you guys have done in the past. One was the Loretta Lynn CD. And so what brought you, mentioned her as one of your main influences. So versus your other main influences, what made you want to do a whole album of Loretta Lynn songs? Why focus a whole disc on that?
We, at the time, had a Loretta Lynn cover band called Butcher Holler. We formed the band because we wanted to be able to return to some of our favorite Irish bars in Boston. We wanted to be able to play these small pubs that gave us our start.
Mm.
But when we would appear there under my name, it would be too much of a madhouse. And so we started, it was a way of being incognito in Boston. And so we thought if people just saw Butcher Holler on the chalkboard outside, they wouldn't come in. And we
sort of the anti-marketing technique, right?
Yeah. And we were listening to a lot of Loretta Lynn in the van at the time. And I was realizing that a lot of my favorite songs that she recorded were ones that she wrote. So I thought, wouldn't it be fun if we tried to do all songs that Loretta Lynn wrote for our live set as Butcher Holler, which is the name of her little hometown in Kentucky. And so it was really fun. We learned, I don't know, like 30 Loretta Lynn songs, and had a great time doing it. And then the president of our record label, Signature Sounds, heard us one night and said, "Let's do an album like this." So
okay.
We said, okay.
And one of your other side projects is Shake. I'm going to get that name wrong.
Sacred Shakers.
Sacred Shakers.
It's
yes.
A tongue twister.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that, because you have two albums from that, right?
Yeah, we have a live album and a studio album. As it's a gospel side project, I call it a side project, but it's actually a precursor to our band. We got together before. I guess I said we got together for the recording of our first album, but that's not exactly correct, because just before that, we were doing a country gospel brunch together in the Boston area at these little Irish pubs that we love. And we would have different guests each week. It was always on Sunday morning, and it was just a lot of fun. It was a good chance to just learn a lot of old gospel tunes that we always really loved. And we came from different backgrounds faith-wise, which I thought was fun, too. There were a couple people who are agnostic, including myself, some lapsed Catholics, an actual believer, and a couple Jews or former Jews. I'm not sure how they identify. But it was an 8-piece band and lots of raucous fun. And again, the president of our label heard that, and okay. I guess he likes what we do.
Well, there you go. That works out well.
Yeah.
Speaking of what you do, do you have another song that you could do for us?
Sure. Let's do another one from Gypsy. So you can be fully forewarned. This one's called Miles to Go.
We just have a couple more minutes. Are there any questions from the audience here that you want to ask the band or Elin?
How's my daughter? She's great. She's 5. She's going to start kindergarten in a couple weeks. She is the boss dog of the barnyard. You'll hear and see her in a little while, I'm sure.
Lots of life changes when you become a parent. So how has that affected, or has it not affected your music?
Oh man, she's a big part of what inspires me. Just not only with music, but just in life in general. She's like a tiny boss and a tiny little spiritual advisor. She keeps me in line. She's great. Yeah, I've written some songs about her, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more where that came from.
Nice. So you have a website. It is
elinjewel.com.
Okay, and Facebook and other stuff, social media.
Facebook and other stuff.
Yeah,
and
August 16th is the new disc, Gypsy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Elin, and the band, everybody. Thank you for being here today. I also want to do a shout-out to the sound guy here at Sugar Maple, Daniel Nash. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks to the organizers of Sugar Maple for having us, and thanks also to Steve Gotcher, our WPR engineer, who's doing the recording today. Everybody have a great day. Enjoy the weather, and enjoy this great music.
Thank you.